You guys know I'm crazy about Audible because it offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, including the latest bestsellers and new releases. Audible really is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment, with female writers and heroines, celebrity narration, multicast productions with immersive sound design, and traditional audiobooks. Audible has you covered for any type of excitement that you're looking for. In fact, right now I'm listening to The Second Husband by Kate White. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. That's audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. With four daughters and two on a dance team, I can tell you we go through a lot of mascara in my house. But I'm crazy about L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara, which catches every lash from corner to corner for maximum volume. If you're looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank, this is yours. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. I've been using it for about 2 weeks now, and I feel like my eye has completely opened up, and the girls are crazy about it too. They've got a tapered brush to catch every lash, one of the best mascara wands that I've ever used. And like I said, this luxe appearance of this gold package, you got to get it. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today. L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara. You're going to love it.
The amazing Kate Casey.
Welcome back to another episode of Reality Life with Kate Casey. Hope that you've had a great week so far. You have to watch part three of The Real Housewives, a Beverly Hills reunion this week because Andy Cohen asks one of my questions. So make sure you watch out for that. City Confidential is back on Annie. Such a great show if you love true crime stuff. Each episode tells the story of one crime, the investigation, and the ripple effect it had on a community. So it begins and you learn about where this crime was committed. And I have to tell you, maybe it's this show, maybe it's all these shows, but I'm telling you, I feel like all these crimes are committed in Florida and California. I'm telling you. But it's a great show and you got to check that out. 48 Hours Mystery 2 weeks ago had a great episode. It's called Linda's Story and it looks at the murder of 11-year-old Linda O'Keefe, which is a case that has been unsolved for so many years and it took place here in my hometown of Newport Beach. So Tracy Smith investigates this cold case in the episode. Basically, Linda disappeared after she'd called her mother for a ride home. Her mom told her that she was busy and said, "You have to walk home." She was in summer school. So witnesses reported seeing Linda talking to a man in a turquoise van on a street corner. The following morning, her body was found along the Back Bay, which is like a nature trail. So there were very few clues about what happened. And after years of working on the case, the detectives eventually ran out of leads and the case went cold. So they came up with this brilliant idea. On the 45th anniversary of the day that she disappeared, the police department launched a series of tweets in a thread telling the story of her disappearance, but in her voice, which I watched in real time. So it's like, you know, it's the morning time. I'm Linda. I'm about to go off to summer school. And it goes throughout the day. Well, they eventually found out who the killer was based on genetic genealogy and the help of Cece Moore, who I've interviewed before. She's amazing. So basically, people that submit their DNA for any of these DNA ancestry connection sites, when they do that, they allow DNA from crimes to be matched up. And that's how they found the killer. They were able to connect from, you know, one of their connected relatives. So the gentleman that did this, I shouldn't say gentleman, but the man that did it moved off to Colorado. He had a little bit of a rap sheet already. And he went on to have a family. I mean, just living in a suburban town and to find out that he had done this. So as I mentioned, it's in Newport Beach and I had heard a little bit about it, but just to hear the interviews with the classmates, it's just heartbreaking. And then they show you the corner where she disappeared from. And then I realized my friend lives around the corner. So I text her, "Nicole, do you know about this case of Linda O'Keefe?" She's like, "Oh, do I know? I only think about it every single day." So it's wild because I drive past that corner all the time. And now I can't unshake that this little girl, you know, almost like 48 years ago had just been talking to some man on a corner and she disappeared. So look out for that episode. It was 48 Hours Mystery about 2 weeks ago and it's called Linda's Story. this episode, so excited about. Eddie Lucas is the most charming guy from Below Deck. Below Deck is that Emmy-nominated series that covers the life of the people that work on a yacht. And it's always hilarious because it's the interpersonal communication between the captain and the yachties, but also the charter guests who are often crazier than the yachties. So this season begins this Monday. It's set on the stunning waters of St. Kitts in the Caribbean. And it's like, listen, if I'm not going to go on vacation for a while, at least I can watch the show, right? So Eddie is back and in his new role as first officer, he's worked his way up. And Rachel's back. She's the chef. She's trying to redeem herself after last charter season and a fresh group of yachties. And of course, Captain Lee, who's hilarious. So you got to watch Below Deck. And it just starts this week and you can dip into it. If you've never watched a show before, you're going to love it. And you're going to love Eddie. So I was so excited to track him down. He lives in Baltimore, a man after my own heart. So that is a great interview. And then House of Secrets, The Bharari Deaths is a three-part series on Netflix. My friend Chris DeRosa was like, have you seen it? I said a three-part series on Netflix. You had me at hello. So this one explores the theories surrounding the demise of 11 members of the same family in India who died on June 30th of 2018. This, when I tell you, was the biggest story in India and then trickled out to everywhere else in the world, because it was the most bizarre sequence of events. So this series reopens the case file with the help of police and journalists. This family were like any other middle-class family. They were settled and focused on a better future until a death in 2007 shook them to their core. So while those who saw the family from outside felt they had found solace in spirituality, what happened inside the four walls of the house may never be known because there's no one left to explain. So in the morning of July 1st, this police officer reaches the house at 7:18 a.m. because they noticed that no one was coming in and out and they hadn't seen, you know, anybody in the neighborhood. So a few minutes after police control room call was made, the police officer pushed a few people crowding the narrow lane and took the steps leading to the scene of the crime. On the first floor of the house, the bodies were found hanging in a circular formation. The grandmother was found dead on the floor in the adjacent room, and the deaths, initially suspected to be a case of murder because of tied limbs, blindfolds, and gag mouths, baffled the investigators after they discovered 11 diaries scribbled with notes detailing the situation. So based on the diary entries, the police suspected it may be a case of a ritual gone wrong, leading to what could be called a mass suicide, but that perhaps it wasn't meant to end in death. It was just a part of a ritual. So the police said that the diaries were dictated by one of the sons, Lalit, who believed that the spirit of his father, the one who had died in 2007, was communicating with him and instructing him to perform this banyan tree worship for the betterment of the family. It is so strange. It is so interesting. And I know a lot of you like psychological thrillers and true crime stories, and this one's right up your alley. You're going to definitely think about it for a couple days. It's not for the faint of heart, as Chris says, but definitely one to watch. And it's again called House of Secrets, The Bharari Deaths, three-part series on Netflix. So here we go with Eddie Lucas from Below Deck and Chris DeRosa helping me review House of Secrets, The Bharari Deaths. Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way that you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman, and they pass the savings on to us. So I just got a 100% organic cotton tiered maxi skirt in red and a chiffon pleated midi skirt in soft pink. Now I'm going to wear both of them with either a white scoop t-shirt or a black tank top. In fact, wait, should we all get the same outfit and meet for drinks? Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/KateCasey for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/KateCasey to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/KateCasey. This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. If you're looking for new style inspiration, Saks.com is the place to go. Saks.com is making it easy for me to shop for the spring with their selection of chic clothes and accessories. Right now, I'm looking at Saks.com so I can find my new going out vibe. I'm looking for a breezy Zimmermann dress for an evening cocktail party. And for my upcoming conference in Los Angeles, I'm looking at bright Chloe blazers because I'm pushing myself to wear more orange and pink. Saks.com will inspire you to shop for everything on your agenda. So find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com. Eddie, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
Okay, you got to tell me, before we found you, and you were truly like the Tom Hanks of Below Deck, tell me how they found you and where you're from. You're from Chesapeake Bay, correct?
Well, I live on the Chesapeake Bay in Baltimore, Maryland. I live right in the city, Baltimore, Maryland. How they found me, that was a wild story. You know, season one, I didn't even know that this was an option. And it was never really my idea to be on television. I never was planning to try to do this type of gig. But at the time, I was out of college and I was working at an outdoor store and selling hiking boots and rain gear. And I had my captain's license prior. And I was tired of working the retail life. And if anybody's ever worked retail life, they know how horrible it can be. But I put my CV out there, I put my resume out there, I gave it a bunch of crew finding agencies and everything like that, looking for other jobs on ships. And one day while I was at work, I was back in the warehouse looking for a pair of hiking boots from an exceedingly rude customer. I got a phone call and they asked me if I was still actively looking for a position on a crew. And, they kind of explained the boat that they were on and, the positions that they were looking to fill and asked me if I was interested. And I said, yeah, I'm interested. And they're like, well, this is a little different. And then they went into the whole quote unquote reality documentary series that they're filming about living and working aboard luxury yachts. And they wanted to know if I was still interested. And as I was standing in the warehouse with a pair of hiking boots under my arm and a customer screaming at me from the front saying, where's my hiking boots? I said, yes, I'm very interested. Get me out of here. And it was seriously 2 weeks later, I was on a flight to Fort Lauderdale and then from Fort Lauderdale to St. Martin. And then I had a camera in my face for the next 6-7 weeks. And it's been a wild ride ever since.
Now, did your family say you've lost your mind or were they excited about it?
Some of my family were excited. Some of my family had some trepidations about it for sure. My father was like, oh God, I don't know about this, Eddie, don't embarrass the name. I think for the most part, I got away with that. And then after I did embarrass the name, I took 5 years off, but hey, I'm back again. So it's good.
So what, first question is that season one, you started out as a deckhand. By seasons two and three, you were a mm-hmm. bosun. And now mm-hmm. you have a totally different job. So for the lay people, what is the difference between those positions?
The difference between those positions. So a deckhand is low man on the totem pole. From there, you can move up to a bosun. Bosun pretty much runs the deck team, the deckhands. And then from bosun, you can move up. There's many, many positions, but in my line, I moved up to a first officer, and the first officer is in charge, is pretty much second in command and is in charge of not only deck operations, but all operations, interior and exterior on the vessel. So that includes the housekeeping, the stews on the inside and the galley and the deck team. And it's pretty much like a liaison between the team leads and the captain.
And after you film seasons one and two and then three of this show, how does this uh-huh. change the trajectory of your life? Not just your career, but also your personal life. I mean, to go from selling hiking boots to then all of a sudden people knowing who you are and losing a little bit of anonymity, how did that affect you?
Losing the privacy was something that I still struggle with today. And I honestly still fight very, very hard to keep my private life private. I don't post a lot about my private life on my social media and I don't kind of read into things or talked about, you know, too much of it. So that's something I still hold very near and dear to me. But yeah, I mean, going out and, you know, in Baltimore, I'm really not recognized that much. And usually I grow a beard out, so people don't really recognize me that much. So, you know, I don't really kind of get into the whole kind of like, you know, fame side of this whole thing, but, you know, it's still like being on this show and being a part of it has been really amazing. And it's been, you know, there's been ups and downs about it for sure. You know, and people judging you and thinking that they know you just from watching you from 6-7 weeks of filming, can be difficult. And, but at the same time, you know, if you get into this, you know, you'd have to have a thick skin right off the bat.
Season 3, I remember you had a girlfriend and then there was this, a little bit of a tryst, and then you walked away and then you came back. How much of that affected wanting to walk away? Was that part of it? Or did you feel like this TV thing, I got everything that I want out of it right now? Or was it like, I want a totally new adventure? Because I know that you worked in tugboats for a couple of years.
I still do. I'm driving one right now, actually. So, you know, it's that there's a lot of reasons that I took a step back. And a big reason was, you know, people kind of peering into my relationship at the time and making their own assessments and making their own judgments of my private life. But also I was trying to salvage the relationship that I had at the time. I realized the mistakes I had made and I wanted to make them right. And being on the television show, it at that point it had gotten the better of me and it did go to my head a little bit. And I wasn't staying true to who I really was. The reason I want to step back is because I wanted to kind of reassess who I was at that time and get back to what's important to me and the beliefs that are important to me. And I just kind of ground myself a little bit. So there was the whole kind of trying to salvage my relationship, trying to rediscover myself. And then once the relationship didn't pan out, you know, I realized that, you know, I needed to definitely take some even more time to work out why it didn't. And to, you know, just reassess my core values and, you know, learn how to be a better person all in all.
Can I tell you something? I really respect that because I think a lot of people, can be very intoxicating to be on a show. And it's very hard for most people to walk away, not just because of the money that you can make, but also the recognition and all that comes with it. And so to walk away, I really have respect that you did that. How did that break impact the way you went back into the show?
Well, I think people can see maybe a bit of a similarities between, you know, my first season going out and then, you know, the recent season I did. It was that season 8 now. You know, whereas I went season 1, I came back, I came in, you know, just being focused on the job at hand and just trying to go in, work hard, have fun, and enjoy the ride, learn as much as I could. And I think I needed to kind of, you know, I think I got a little big to my britches after season 2, and I came in season 3 and things were kind of going awry in my life with the relationship and personal life and everything like that. And I just kind of, I lost my bearings. And so I, you know, took the time back to refigure everything out. So I think coming back and taking that time, you know, I feel like I tried to come back to just having fun, enjoying the ride, working hard, taking my job seriously, and not getting in and not putting myself into positions or thinking that I can put myself into a position that I could just get away with or do because I'm on a television show. Mm. You know, it's not, you know, this television show only lasts for, in my mind, it's 6-7 weeks of filming. And then I come right back to my normal life.
So Captain Lee must be an enormously influential person for you because I think he has done a good job of maintaining his privacy and his own life separate from the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, Captain Lee has been a mentor of mine, you know, since the day I met him, and his ability to keep his private life private, but then at the same time, he's very vocal about what's important to him. And, you know, he uses the platform that he has had the opportunity of getting to talk about what's important and to advocate for his core values and his core beliefs. And that's really admirable in my eyes. And so, you know, right now, like, you know, obviously there's things that I'd like to advocate for, but at the same time, it's like, I don't think I'm at that point yet to be able to do that. And so I try to keep quiet and I try to keep my mouth shut and keep my head down as much as I can. And just, you know, stay humble, you know, just be so thankful for the opportunity that I was given to be on this television show and to have the opportunities and to have the learning experiences that I've had. And hopefully how I am on the show is you're able to see that. So
did you watch the show at all when you were taking that break, or was it just like, I need to separate myself?
I would watch occasional episodes, you know, kind of like catch up, see what's going on. But for the most part, no, I don't really watch the show outside of the episodes that I'm on.
And what did the good people of the world of tugboats think of the show? Do they watch it, or they're like, oh, we have no idea what you're talking about?
Some of them do. Some of them don't. Most of them don't really have any idea what I'm talking about. But it's but you know, like my crew that I'm with are all really supportive of me, and the company I'm with is very supportive and allows me to take that time off, which is
very cool.
Which is really very cool to be able to do that. To allow me to keep doing this, you know, that's huge, and I'm very thankful to the company for that. But yeah, a lot of them are like, yeah, you're crazy. And yeah, they're not wrong.
They're not wrong. So new season starts, and now you're in St. Kitts. The name of the super yacht is My Sienna, correct?
Yes, that's right. Yep.
When you say that, how do you not break into Mamai Sharona, Mamai Sienna?
Trust me, that happens a lot.
Yeah, that would drive me definitely crazy. No,
it definitely happens a lot. But because of copyright issues, I don't think they air it. That's one thing.
Well, that's good to know. Well, tell me about this boat and tell me about this crew, because you are now, which must be so trippy, you're like a seasoned vet with Captain Lee, and you've got this ragtag group of crew members. You're now flipped and you're the seasoned pro. How many times this season did you want to slam your head against a wall?
Almost every day I want to slam my head against the wall. But, you know, because it's, you know, this boat, I've been on it before, but then, you know, all the crew that I get along with it, they've never been on it before. And so, you know, and the season is, it is a, like ultra marathon sprint. I mean, it is long and quick and grueling, and there's no time to like do anything else. Like all you're doing is living and breathing this season. And it can be absolutely crazy and frustrating to have to like take the time to try to teach somebody how to do something. And especially a new crew coming on, they don't know where anything is. They don't know how anything's really done. I mean, maybe some of them have experience with cleaning everything like that, but still like learning a new boat where everything is and all that is extensive process. And so it's, you know, it can be really difficult. We know we got a new crew coming on, but at the same time, you have a crew getting, or a charter getting picked up in, you know, 24 hours. And it's insane. It's absolutely insane. So pretty much from day one, I'm smacking my head against the wall going, what am I doing here again?
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's, you know, at the end of the charter, when you get a good charter out there, it's very satisfying, very rewarding, and you feel great about it.
Okay, speed round. Do you get a roommate in your new position? Do you have to share a cabin with somebody?
Yes, I do. Yeah, I'm sharing a cabin with Fraser this season. He is probably one of the best roommates I've ever had.
Oh, good.
Clean is an understatement.
Because I did wonder at our age, would you ever be laying in a bunk bed looking at the ceiling and wondering, why am I still living like a Boy Scout?
there's always times, but you know, it's like, you know, working in this industry and being a professional sailor, you're going to bunk with people sometimes. It's just, you're lucky. It's only really bad when you have to hot bunk with somebody. And that means hot bunking is when you have to share a bed with them.
Oh, sweet Jesus.
So like they get out. So like you'll be sleeping and then it's your watch. So you get up, relieve them, and they get in the same bed as it's still hot.
Wow.
So that's why it's called hot bunking. Yeah.
Okay. Does anybody have to wash your underwear?
No, I usually do my own laundry. Okay, you know, the stews, they've got enough going on.
Does anybody cook for you?
Yes. The chef is responsible for crew food.
Okay. And are you a high maintenance person? Are you like, listen, I'm gluten-free, vegan?
I am not high maintenance at all. I will eat pretty much anything.
Okay.
Pretty much anything.
If you were not working this job, do you think that there is a parallel life you would have been? Like, you would have been an excellent military officer, you know, corporate executive. In your parallel dreams, where else do you think you would have been highly successful?
Well, you know, I have a degree in adventure education. And right before I took this job, working at Moran, I mean, working at on the tugboats and then working on the show, I actually had a job offer being a mountaineering guide in Oman in the Middle East.
Oh, wow.
And so I was just about to leave out and do that when I got this position.
And then my last question is, of all the people that are on this show, and you cannot say Captain Lee, he is not, you can't do it. Who are okay. we going to see you have the most memorable moments with?
On this season coming up, you know, the crew member Jake and I have a pretty good time. He's got great energy. He is absolutely wild. But I think some of the most memorable seasons, the most memorable crew member I probably ever was probably season one with my deckhand Dave. You know, he and I had a great time together. We worked really hard, and we had a lot of fun along the way. Okay, he's a great guy.
And where can people follow you?
People can follow me on Instagram at Eddie Lucas, and they can also find me on Cameo.
Oh,
and I can make personalized videos for them.
Whether you need to buy or sell, or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes so you can see new homes first. And they give you personalized recommendations based on the homes that you like, so you can find the home that's just right for you, whether that's a cabin, a craftsman, or a castle. With the top-rated Redfin app, you can favorite homes, share listings with others, and schedule tours, and even on the same day, with a local Redfin agent who can help guide you through the whole home buying process. And if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents have the experience to get you the best price possible for your home. That's because they sell twice as many homes as other agents. With a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put towards what matters most to you, like your next home. In fact, last year, Redfin saved home sellers $127 million. No matter where you are in your real estate journey, Redfin can help. Download the Redfin app to get started today.
If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Chris, tell the good people who are listening to this, on a scale of 1 to 10, how bizarre is this case?
I want to say an 11. It was so different from anything I feel like the case itself, from any other thing that I've watched or listened to. Like the fact that there was 11 people that were dead, they all died basically at the same time. And it was just from the beginning, from the episode one, you literally are just like, what happened here? Like, how is at all is this? Immediately you're like, this has to be a murderer. It has to be a murderer. It has to be a murderer. It has to be a murderer. And then as the case unfolds, it's just so interesting to see like what actually happened. And I was shell-shocked from the very first episode.
So they'd been living in this double-story house in a very poor neighborhood in Berari for about 20 years. And the family ran a grocery shop and a plywood business in the area. In 2006, Lalit Chundarat's father, Bhopal, died of natural causes. And after the death of their late father, Lalit became very introverted. And one day he told his family that he was possessed by his father's soul, who advised him the ways to attain a good life. And since 2007, he had been maintaining a diary on his father's instructions. So 10 of the 11 people, 2 men, 6 women, 2 teens, were found hanging in the courtyard of the house, as mentioned. They were blindfolded. Their mouths were taped. Some of the bodies had their hands and feet tied as well. And as mentioned, the other woman, the grandmother, was found dead in the other room. So at first you're trying to figure out, how is it possible that they could all die the same way? And they're, again, bound, tape over their eyes, and with cotton in their mouth, which is also strange. So as it unfolds, and the pet dog of the family was the only survivor in the house, he was chained on the terrace and suffering from high fever when the police found him. And again, this is in a very packed neighborhood. So the idea of this just going on, you know, amongst a community of people is crazy. So what's interesting is that in the days before, they had all purchased stools. And so then police find these 11 diaries in the house, all of them maintained for the period of 11 years. The Joint Commissioner of Police said that we have found handwritten notes detailing how hands and legs are to be tied and are quite similar in the manner in which the bodies of the 10 persons that were found. And there are exhaustive notes and we are studying them. And then those details provided in the diaries matched how the bodies were found. The faces covered, mouths taped, and the cotton balls in the ears. And the diary also mentions, everyone will tie their own hands, and when the ritual is done, everyone will help each other untie their hands, indicating that the family was not expecting to die. And one of the men had his fingers kind of unwound as if he had struggled to try to undo himself. So psychologists have commented that these deaths are a ritual, a result of shared psychotic disorder in which members of a group blindly trust one among them and follow instructions without questioning. And psychologists debate whether Lalit suffered from a delusional disorder. How in the world was he able to convince all these family members that this was, that basically this was an instruction from the deceased father?
I think that we live our lives very different from the way that they do. Like, there's a hierarchy in the family that, like, we as Americans don't really have anymore. That, like, you give respect to your, like, the eldest man, or, like, kind of just, like, the head of the household. And you kind of follow suit with what happens based on what they think. And so it's interesting because we kind of don't think that way anymore. I was watching it with my boyfriend and his mother, and we were all talking about it the whole time. I was like, but still, like, how do you convince these people to do this? It really was very interesting to think about. And I still am thinking about it today. I watched it a couple nights ago and I'm still thinking about it today.
And the fact that they would allow their children to participate in it. I have to tell you, when it started, I just kept thinking this is some sort of religious ceremony. It has to be. But then I think that the diaries really were surprising. And what a find, by the way, because they could have been gone in circles for years and years about what had happened, but the diaries really were the key way of figuring out the puzzle of this case.
Well, and exactly what you said, it's they didn't, there were no, like, defensive wounds, mostly. For all that we know, they were doing this willingly. And so it's interesting that they found out that, like, no, none of these people believed that they were going to die whenever they did this. That part was at least a little comforting, that they didn't know what they were getting themselves into, that you didn't think that, because from the beginning, you're thinking, oh, this entire family just killed themselves just to do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's like, why would anyone ever do something like that? It doesn't make any sense that, like, three generations of a family would all want to end their lives. And so it was very, very interesting to watch as it unfolded, like, that clearly they had kind of been groomed and brainwashed from, like, years and years of following these diaries and believing that it's their, you know, the patriarch grandfather, like, speaking through one of the sons. It was a very interesting. And I think another thing that really struck me was that their friends are in the documentary, and all they say is about how, like, we never for one second knew that any of this was happening. Yes. Like, their neighbors, their friends, like, all the people that were in their lives that weren't blood and didn't live in that house, none of them had suspected anything at all.
And then you think about, there are probably a house of secrets everywhere. People probably in my own neighborhood, that things are going on. And the fact that it could be a group shared psychotic disorder is probably not as unusual as one would think, especially in times of struggle. I feel like the longer I think about this, the more it upsets me that there are probably cases where this is likely to happen?
When I think it's exactly. And I think that that's something that they say at the, in the last episode a lot, is they talk a lot about the fact that they need to be speaking about these things more. And like, these secrets can't be kept because this stuff will continue to happen if like, you're never allowed to tell anyone what goes on inside your house. You know what I mean? If you're like, these people needed to be able to say something. And even think about like the 15-year-old, the friend was like, hey, want to play? Like, and he was like, no, not today. Like tomorrow. Meanwhile, he like was, you know, walking up the stairs to go to his death, basically. It's crazy to think that this one man claiming to be speaking for his father had so much control over so the lives of these people.
And it's not a case of familicide because, as you said, they didn't plan to die. So you can't wrap your brain around it as easily.
It reminded me a little bit of the Heaven's Gate cult because like they, it's not at all the same, but they kind of like knew that they were going to be doing this ritual and they were like willing to be doing the ritual all because this one person said something. Yes. Did the Heaven's Gate people know that they were going to die on Earth? Yes. But they believed that they were rising up to go meet their creator and like their leader. Yeah, like in the spaceship. So it's like they actually were like, no, I'm leaving this body and going like, my life is continuing on in this other realm. So it's like interesting. I don't know. It reminded me a lot of that because it's like, how do you convince your followers to, and what is the point of wanting of a leader wanting to have themselves and the followers commit suicide or like want to end their lives? You know what I mean? It's like, if we can't all be in this together anymore, I'm going to like wipe everyone out.
And the systematic brainwashing over a course of 11 years. You know, like you said, that one man's power and that they all participated at his urging. And you can't help but just wonder in the last moments what that panic must have felt like.
And I wonder if they knew what was happening. I don't know. It's very hard. And that's another thing is that you see that they're collecting all the supplies to do this themselves. And so it's very interesting that you're seeing these people, like, because you keep wanting to think, no, there's no way that they did this. There's no way that they did this. And then you keep watching it and it's like, oh my God, they like knew this was going to happen. I feel bad. It was a heartbreak. It was not for the faint of heart. Don't watch this if you don't want to be very upset. Yeah. But it was a very thought-provoking. And I think another thing that really was interesting is seeing that, like, I don't know if this was comforting or even more horrifying, but the fact that like the media had kind of sensationalized it hardcore. I was like, oh, we're not the only country that does this. So like, sensational things. But then also I'm like, oh, but also I don't want any, you know what I mean? Like, it's also really upsetting that every country does this, but it was like watching all that footage of them doing like a ghost hunters show in the apartment. And then like, they kept doing these like news reports with like the nooses, like hanging around and stuff. Yeah, and it was messed up.
I feel like people who love psychological thrillers, really interesting true crime documentaries, this is right up your alley. You're going to think about it for a couple of days. I love you dearly. Tell everybody about your new podcast. I was a recent guest and had the best time.
Yes, you were. We thank you so much for doing it. I have created a new podcast with my co-host Zero Waste Daniel. The podcast is called This Is Not Sustainable. And it's a little bit about sustainability, a little bit about just answering advice questions, and then obviously a little bit about talking to our guests. And you were a guest on our podcast, and we talk a little bit about how you got started. You are our fourth episode, and we talk about your podcast and then also just like you being a mother of five, how you try to make things as waste-free as possible.
Yeah. Well, it's hard. These animals.
It's very hard. No, it's not. It's not easy. And our podcast is no judgment. And it's, we just meet everyone where they are. And that's not, you know, you don't have to be an expert. You don't have to be in anything to be a part of it. And, it's really fun to be talking to so many people about like sustainability, trying to do little life hacks and also just answering advice. You can find the show, This Is Not Sustainable, anywhere you get podcasts. And it's This Is Not Sustainable on TikTok, which we have a few videos with a million views. And the podcast is at This Is Not Sustainable Pod.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you so much. Love talking to you always.
The amazing Kate Casey.
I want to thank my great guests, Eddie and Chris, and remind you to join the Facebook group, Reality Life with Kate Casey, to leave a 5-star review on iTunes or wherever you listen to this podcast. I'm so appreciative of all the love and support. I'm a one-man band. I love it, love it, love it. Thank you for supporting me. Also, you can find me on Instagram at @KateKCCA, where you can see all the shows that I'm watching. I put out a list every week on Mondays. It will come to your inbox. If you go to katekasey.substack.com, you will get that. It is worth it. I will tell you what to watch each week. You can find me on Twitter at @KateKasey. My Patreon with bonus episodes, extra episodes, is at Patreon, patreon.com/KateKasey. And I can't wait to circle back with you on Friday for another great episode. Have a great week.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.